Welcome to Trips Talking Sports. I'm your host, Jerome Shaw III, a.k.a. Trips, and I'm relaunching my podcast. This is the first episode of that relaunch. I will start out with college football opening weekend in the books. A lot of upsets throughout the weekend. Houston knocking off Oklahoma and Wisconsin knocking off LSU. Both of those games, while they were neutral sites, they were home games for both the Badgers and Cougars. Houston's game turned on a missed field goal that was returned for a touchdown. Momentum for Houston, and they're able to take down the Sooners by a score of 33-23. The Badgers had a sound game plan, ball control, short passing game, control the clock. Kept the more talented Tiger offense off the field and allowed the Badgers to stay in the game long enough to eventually pull off the upset and interception late to seal a 16-14 victory. Moved to Sunday, in a spectacular game that went to double overtime, the Texas Longhorns knock off the Notre Dame Fighting Irish 50-47. Texas was up 28-14, had a chance to put the Irish on the ropes, were not able to put the ball in the end zone, had to settle for a field goal, went up 31-14, left the door open just a crack, and the Irish ran through the door. They went up 35-31, and you thought the game was over. The Irish mystique did it again. Texas came down, scored a touchdown, made it 37-35, but the Irish blocked the extra point, return it for 2 points, you're tied at 37, and then a critical shot block penalty on Texas as they're driving for the game-winning field goal, sends it to overtime. That's where you thought the game would go to the Irish. That was the last chance for Texas to win the game. They go through overtime, both teams score a touchdown, Texas gets the ball first. In the first overtime, scores the touchdown, the Irish answer one play on their possession, it goes back to the Irish. In the second overtime, they're forced into a three and out, kick the field goal, and then the Longhorns score a touchdown, win the game, and we had our third upset of the weekend. In the game between the Irish and Longhorns, the two-headed monster of Texas at quarterback beat the two-headed monster for the Irish. Shane Buechele and Tyrone Swoops were able to lead the Longhorns past the Irish led by Deshaun Kizer and Malik Zaire. Two teams with two quarterbacks. I always say if you have two, you have none. But when it comes to Texas, they really have one quarterback with Buechele, and Swoops is more of a wildcat quarterback than anything else through one pass in the game. Looked like we started to see some separation between the two quarterbacks for the Irish. It'll play out later on in the season. Big win for the Longhorns. Are they back on the map? Everyone says they are. It's one game. It's an upset. Things happen. It's the first game of the season. A lot of these rankings are based off of last year's rankings. That's why you need to wait a month before you do rankings, because right now, all you're doing is basing it off last year, and you're not looking at certain issues like LSU not having a quarterback again, yet they're ranked fifth. Clemson struggled as the number two team in the country, only beat Auburn by 6 points, 19-13. Then again, you have Ohio State and Michigan rolling their opponents. Ohio State destroying Bowling Green, putting 77 points on the Falcons. Michigan destroying Hawaii, 7th-ranked team in the country, the Wolverines. Those two teams should move up with the defeats of Oklahoma and LSU. Not sure how far Oklahoma will fall because they lost to Houston, but when you look at LSU, they should plummet, losing to Wisconsin in, what was it, a fact-at-home game for the Badgers. Moving to Monday, you almost had teams ranked 3, 4, and 5 lose as the number 4 Seminoles of Florida State escape Mississippi. Battle of two ranked teams, game played down in Florida. The Seminoles, the largest comeback in school history as they beat the Rebels 45-34. An exciting game, Mississippi's high-tempo offense, and you had Florida State breaking in a new quarterback. Freshman in his first game, took a quarter for him to get into the flow of things. And that touchdown drive for the Seminoles, down 28-6, late in the second quarter, Francois throws that touchdown pass as he's getting knocked to the ground, and because they get the ball to start the second half, instead of just scoring 7 points, they turn it into 10, getting a field goal on their first drive of the second half. Then two miscues by Mississippi's offense, an interception, a fumble. Florida State exploits it, and they turn a game that was a 22-point deficit into a 1-point lead. And from there, momentum is with Florida State, and they eventually get the victory 45-34. Not sure if they will move up in the rankings because they did trail by 22 at one point. Ranking 7 come out as of the time of this recording. Wouldn't be surprised to see both Ohio State and Michigan in the top 5. Bama rolls. They destroy USC, put the worst loss on the Trojans in their history. Payback from Lane Kiffin, the offensive coordinator for Alabama. in this first week. A lot of good games to watch. A lot of top-ranked opponents. Florida State, Mississippi, Oklahoma, Houston. A couple other good games where you had Clemson and Auburn, with the Tigers of Auburn usually being in the rankings. This year they're not, but they could be a good team throughout the season. Maybe at the end of the year they're ranked, and that win helps Clemson in their chase for one of the four slots for the playoff. UCLA goes down to Texas A&M. Not a great weekend for the Pac-12. Big Ten, their powerhouses of both Ohio State and Michigan roll, look impressive doing so. Ohio State getting ready for their matchup week 3 against Oklahoma. A game that will either completely eliminate Oklahoma from the race for a playoff spot, or get them right back in it, knock the Big Ten's top dog out of the race. Then Ohio State would have to run the table and knock off Michigan. And then you're looking at Oklahoma touting, well, we beat Ohio State. And then Houston coming back saying they beat Oklahoma, who also beat Ohio State. A big banner for the other five. Those outside of the Power Five. Houston's carrying the flag this year for them. With that win over Oklahoma, not only is it a win for the schools outside of the Power Five, but it is also a chance for Houston to make it into the Big 12, which I'll get to a little later. Bringing Week 1's action to the teams in the area, Penn State knocks off Kent State 33-13. It was a frustrating game to watch. Even though they won by 20, it took a while to get to that 20-point victory. Trace McSorley in his first start looked a little off to start. You can expect that. Passes were a little high, hitch in his step. At one point in the game, they had it 4th and short inside the red zone, and they ran the read option, and he fumbled the ball. A lot of little miscues, things that they need to clean up for next week's action at Pitt. What I take away from this game is the new offense. I hope they continue this offense all year long. I love the spread. I love the up-tempo. They're not making McSorley have to do too much. Get to the line, look over to the coaches, and let them tell you what you need to do. Less work for him. They're running the read option. McSorley, a dual-threat quarterback. That's what you need in this day and age in the college game. A guy that can run and pass, especially having a back in Saquon Barkley. When you can run the option with him, it's a nice threat. One more player in the run game you have to account for as a defense. I love the read option. I love this style of offense. One complaint with the offense is a little bit of predictability. As the game wore on, any time Penn State went to 3 wides on the wide side of the field and they put one receiver to the short side, it was usually Chris Godwin, and they were usually using him on an out route or a comeback. While I like the fact that they use a play, and if it works, they'll come back to it later in the game, I'm afraid they're becoming too predictable. I know it's only one game in, but that could be a pattern. If I'm picking up on a pattern one game into the season, defensive coordinators in the Big Ten and their opponent next week, Pitt, can pick up on that and might be able to exploit it. Hopefully it was just a one-game thing, easing McSorley into the offense, easing him into the flow of the game, throwing what was comfortable for him, and they'll expand the offense as the weeks go on. But I do love the fact that they're running a spread offense. I love the tempo of the offense, and hopefully they can use this offense to be competitive in the Big Ten, especially when you're in the division with Ohio State and Michigan State. To the feel-good story of the weekend, even though I hate Pitt and I want them to lose every game they play, feel-good story with James Conner coming back. He scores a touchdown, both rushing and receiving, his first receiving touchdown of his career. Pitt beats Villanova 28-7, a game they should have won by twice as many points. Villanova is a 1AA school. I don't like the fact that Pitt and other schools schedule 1AA schools. They should all be playing Power 5 teams. This Pitt-Penn State rivalry in Week 2 should be a yearly thing. Using the fact that you only have 3 non-conference games should not be an excuse. But getting back to the Pitt-Villanova game, really not much to take from it for Pitt. They sleepwalk through an opponent, but their talent is enough to get them a victory by 21 points over Villanova. They didn't want to show much because of the game against Penn State this week, but when you go through an entire quarter against Villanova and you have no score, and it takes forever to get your second touchdown of the game on a 2-minute drill at the end of the second quarter, there is cause for concern. A little bit of gamesmanship going into this week's action, Pitt and Penn State, as Pat Narduzzi has said none of his players will talk to the media until after the game. Anything said about the game will come from him. I like it. Outside of the state of Pennsylvania, it's not a big deal, Pitt-Penn State rivalry, but here in Western Pennsylvania, it's big, and to see this game back on the schedule means everything. It helps in recruiting, it helped Pitt sell out their stadium, helped with all their season ticket sales. You can say it's not Penn State fans buying Pitt tickets, but it's Pitt fans buying those tickets to sell them on the resale sites to Penn State fans. they're going to go to the game. Whether the Penn State fans bought the season ticket package, the 3-game plans were about the same as the cheapest ticket on the resale sites for this game. Some fans might have done that. Some are buying off the Pitt fans that bought season tickets because they knew the Penn State game would sell. Don't discount the fact that Penn State fans will be at this game and there's going to be a nice large contingent of it. But this is what a rivalry does. This is what happens when you have a game like this. It's going to fill the stands in a non-conference game, whereas a game for Pitt against Villanova at home at Heinz Field, if it wasn't for James Conner's return, I doubt that stadium's full. And I'm sure once it hit halftime, and it's a game where Pitt fans are worried it's only 14-0, how many fans stayed? How many just decided, oh, I'm disgusted with this effort and left? It's going to be a good atmosphere, and it's good for both teams. While Penn State will act like it doesn't matter to them, it helps in recruiting, like I said earlier, and it's a game that needs to be played. You can't say you're going to dominate the state then not play this game. James Franklin, on record when he first came in, said he wanted to dominate the state. Well, here's your chance. You have Pitt this week coming up. After that, you have Temple at home. Here's your chance to do so. Make some noise. Get to 3-0 before you have to play at Michigan. I am so worried about this game with Pitt and Penn State. It's been 16 years since they last played, and that was a loss for Penn State. They have to win this game. I know it's only 3 years in, but if Franklin loses this game, he could start to be on the hot seat, especially if you have a loss to Michigan, a loss to Ohio State, Michigan State, Iowa, a 5-loss season. That could be putting him out the door. He needs to find a way to win this game. Penn State needs to find a way to win this game and get back the respectability. I touted the first week of the season with a lot of good games, even though Auburn wasn't ranked. They played Clemson tight to the end, only lost by 6. The A&M upset over UCLA. Week 2 is an awful slate. Penn State at Pitt is one of the marquee games of the day, even though it's two unranked teams. Virginia Tech and Tennessee are going to play. Arkansas versus TCU. Kentucky-Florida, that's a rivalry. Well, Kentucky's usually not that great. It's still a rivalry inside the SEC. Conference action starting for them. Louisville and Syracuse, a conference game. Couple early conference games, but really a bad slate of games this week, and in week 3, get ready for it. Oklahoma, Ohio State, everything on the line for Oklahoma. Ohio State, yeah, everything's on the line, but they still have their mulligan in their bag. Oklahoma's already used it. If Oklahoma goes to 2 losses, they're done, like I said earlier. Ohio State, they know they can lose this game and still have a shot to make it to the playoff. The committee will excuse 1 loss. They will not excuse 2 losses. You get one, you still have a chance. Especially early in the season, they look the other way. But Oklahoma, in 2 weeks, has to get a win. That's when you'll have another marquee game. But this weekend, no battle of ranked teams. It's an ugly slate for week 2. They had all this hype for week 1, and they didn't plan for week 2. Before I close out the college football portion of the show, the Big 12 is looking to expand. Their plan is to have their teams ready for their meeting on October 17th. 12 teams have made the cut officially, and surprisingly, one of the big teams outside of the Power 5 conferences, Boise State, one of the ones that have made a lot of noise throughout the years as being that team that comes out of the group of 5, not on the list. The 12 schools are Air Force, BYU, Central Florida, Cincinnati, Colorado State, Connecticut, Houston, Rice, South Florida, SMU, Temple, and Tulane. The obvious choice is Houston. Their audition passed with flying colors, knocking off Oklahoma. They should be one of the 2 schools selected for the Big 12. BYU is the obvious choice because they're an independent, but does that bring a big enough cachet for bringing them in? A lot of other teams on this list aren't that notable. A lot of teams from the AAC, teams from Conference USA. A lot of teams in this list aren't geographically feasible for the Big 12. Connecticut? Really? Their closest rival would be West Virginia. And the Mountaineers being in the Big 12 was a bad move, but they needed a conference. Their closest opponent is Iowa State. Conferences need to be put together geographically. Maybe they go SMU because of location, or Rice. Temple makes absolutely no sense, but Houston is a definite team they'll select. I'm going to say BYU if I had to make a prediction. Both Cougars will make it into the Big 12 as the conference looks to expand, get a conference title game, and put themselves back in play for the playoff. As we saw a couple years ago, without a conference title game, they were shut out of the playoff when they had 2 teams that were close enough in the rankings in Baylor and TCU, but because they did not play a title game, they were shut out. Now to the NFL, and I'll start out with teams with new starting quarterbacks. We'll look at the NFC North first, as Teddy Bridgewater suffered a season-ending knee injury, a non-contact injury. With that injury, the Vikings decided to go out and sent a first and a fourth round pick to the Philadelphia Eagles for Sam Bradford, and now Bradford will be starting the year for the Vikings. A slight upgrade over Sean Hill, but still it is an upgrade at quarterback. That was a first round pick going to the Vikings. That opened the door for the Eagles to start Carson Wentz, the number two pick from this year's draft. The plan originally was to have him be a backup, work his way up the depth chart. Ownership said no. Once Bridgewater went down and there was an opportunity to deal Bradford, the Eagles did it. They are able to use this year, which was going to be a bit of a rebuilding year, as a year for Wentz to get experience and hopefully use that to springboard next season. Before Bridgewater got hurt, the Dallas Cowboys made the mistake of playing Tony Romo in the preseason. He was injured in a game against Seattle, brought in Dak Prescott, highly touted draft pick. Not a first rounder like Wentz, but he was a highly touted draft pick. He was playing well in the preseason. There was speculation, is he the quarterback of the future? Romo goes down, now everyone gets to see what Prescott can do. Takes Dallas out of the position of being the favorites in the NFC East because you had the addition of Ezekiel Elliott, the number four pick in the draft, a solid running back behind that offensive line, Romo coming back healthy, Dez healthy, and then because they have to play starters in the preseason, Romo gets hurt. That's why you never play your starters in the preseason. Take a look at the Cowboys. They went from being an 11-5, 12-4 team to 9-7, 8-8, maybe 10-6 if they're lucky, depending on when Romo comes back. He wasn't placed on IR, so it just comes down to how much pain he can tolerate and what Prescott is doing. If Prescott has his team 2-2 after 4 weeks, does he come back in week 5? Romo, that is. Or if Prescott's 3-1, do they wait? And if they go 4-1, 6-2, if it goes to the 8 weeks that they have speculated it could go, now do you bench him after getting you that far in the season? Or do you keep Romo out a week or two longer and let him heal a little more and see what Prescott can do? There's a lot of working parts to the Dallas Cowboys at quarterback, and it all rests on the shoulders of Prescott. If he performs, it will allow the Cowboys to keep Romo out longer, not rush him back, and maybe still steal a playoff spot. Now that I'm done with the quarterbacks that are being replaced due to injury, here are the new ones. We all remember the saga with the Broncos, with Peyton Manning. Was he going to retire? He finally did. Meanwhile, they didn't franchise Brock Osweiler. He becomes a free agent, signs with the Houston Texans. The Broncos go out, acquire Mark Sanchez. Well, Trevor Siemian outplays him in the preseason. They cut Mark Sanchez, and now Siemian is the starter with Paxton Lynch waiting in the wings, backing up this year, and who knows, maybe throughout the season he might become the starter. The defending, as they say, or as I like to call it, reigning champions, looking to figure out what they have at quarterback, may not even make the playoffs. That's a story you'll see all season long. The Cleveland Browns quarterback carousel continues as RG3 Robert Griffin III will be quarterbacking for the Cleveland Browns. Who knows how long he'll be the starter? He's fallen hard. A guy that Washington was willing to trade a bunch of picks for when he was coming out in the draft. He's a bust, and now he's in Cleveland where quarterbacks go to die, careers go to die. The Los Angeles Rams drafted Jared Goff ahead of Carson Wentz. Well, Goff won't be the starting quarterback in Los Angeles, won't even be the backup. Rams are going with Case Keenum as their starter. The Rams won't get much better. They'll probably be a top 5 pick. Probably at the end of the year, last 3 or 4 weeks, you'll see Goff get a chance to start once he has more of a grasp of the offense. They want to move him along slowly. Jimmy Garoppolo will be starting the first 4 games for the Patriots, with Tom Brady finally having to sit out for Deflategate. Normally, at this point in time of the season, predictions are made, division winners, wild cards, MVPs, Super Bowl picks. I don't feel like doing it this year. What I'm going to do is I'm going to look at games of the first weekend of the season. It all starts out Thursday night with a rematch of the Super Bowl, the Carolina Panthers and Denver Broncos, two teams going in opposite directions. The Panthers get back their star receiver Kelvin Benjamin, the best offense in the league last year, gets a weapon to add to the offense, Cam Newton looking to repeat as MVP of the league. The Broncos looking to figure out who their quarterback will be, Trevor Siemian getting his first start. The Broncos will be relying heavily on their D, a lot more than they were in the Super Bowl. Big stage, big game. The quarterbacks will be the focus of this game, but NBC sorely regrets putting Denver as the first game of the year, but they have to because they won the Super Bowl. It's not a battle of Osweiler versus Newton, which it could have been if Denver wasn't arrogant about how it was going to play out with the quarterbacks, didn't want to overpay for Osweiler. He won him a couple games when Manning was hurt, and it got him to stay around. And then when he finally hit a wall, Manning was able to save the day. Without Osweiler, they don't even make the playoffs. And they let him go to Houston because they were cheap. Now they're going to use a rookie quarterback, whether it be Simeon, who will start the year, maybe later on in the year, Paxton Lynch, who I think is the top quarterback of the three that were drafted in the first round. Paxton Lynch will be a great quarterback in this league. While he wasn't the first or second pick overall, he went to a good team, a team that needs a quarterback, a chance for him to be the starter this year, next year, and a running game, defense, everything to help a young quarterback. He just has to beat out Trevor Siemian at some point, or Siemian has to play poorly, then he can advance it on the depth chart. Sunday, key game to watch, Cowboys-Giants, first game for Dak Prescott. Eli Manning, new coach Ben McAdoo. The Giants are the team I think will win the NFC East. I know I'm not making many predictions, just sidebar there. I like the Giants this year. I thought that they were a year away last year. This is going to be their year, now that they don't have to worry about Tom Coughlin coaching them. I like the Giants. The Sunday night game, Patriots-Cardinals lost a lot of luster without Tom Brady. This is the one game out of the four. Without Brady, I expect them to lose. They will go no worse than 2-2 without him, but I don't expect the Patriots to win this game. Monday night, the typical two games for the first week of the season starts out with the Steelers and Redskins. Solid game. You're going to see Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown, one of the top five quarterbacks in the league and the best receiver in the league. It'll be fun to watch Antonio Brown go up against Josh Norman. Steelers without Le'Veon Bell for three games. D'Angelo Williams will be filling in again this season. And the Steelers have nothing at tight end, with Ladarius Green on the PUP list. Long story short, they say it's an ankle, but everyone believes it's concussions. That story will play itself out as the season goes on. Then the other game of the night, Rams-Niners, to cap off the first week of the season. It's going to be a media fest because of Colin Kaepernick, even though he's not going to be the starter. You have Jared Goff, the first overall pick, who's not going to be the starter. The NFC West showdown to finish off the first week of the football season in the NFL. I mentioned one team from the NFC to keep an eye on, the Giants, to win their division. In the AFC West, keep an eye on the Chargers. Everyone talks about the Raiders being a team to watch in the AFC West. I like the Chargers. Phillip Rivers, Antonio Gates, Keenan Allen, Travis Benjamin, Melvin Gordon, they have an offense. Rivers needs to step up. You look at his draft class, and it was Eli Manning, Phillip Rivers, Ben Roethlisberger, and Rivers is the bust of the three. Those two have rings. He doesn't. When quarterbacks have comparable stats, then you look at what their team has done, and Rivers hasn't done much with his team, while Manning and Roethlisberger have. He needs to start to step up as his career's starting to wind down. Just got a new contract. He needs to prove he's worth it. So keep an eye out on the Chargers in the AFC, at the very least for a wild card. In that topsy-turvy AFC West where Denver is coming down a peg, Kansas City has Alex Smith, who is Mr. Checkdown, Derek Carr and the Raiders trying to ascend to the top of the division. Watch out for the Chargers. Now to Major League Baseball. The Pittsburgh Pirates are 67-68. They're on a 7-game losing streak, and they've gone from being competitive for a wild card slot, the number 2 wild card slot held right now by the Cardinals, to scrambling to save their season, stay above 500. They're pathetic right now. They can't pitch. When they finally do pitch, they can't hit. They were shut out a couple times in this 7-game losing streak. Their opponents in this streak are averaging almost 7 runs. The Pirates are averaging a little over 3 runs a game. It's not enough. The lineup Clint Hurdle keeps throwing out there is garbage. He won't play Adam Frazier, who's hitting over 300, but he'll play Josh Harrison because, well, it's Jay Hay, and he has to play Jay Hay. He's playing John Jaso at first base. Why he's at first base, I have no clue. Josh Bell, is he playing first base every day? I don't care how bad he is at first base. The kid can rake. Professional hitter. He's shown it from the first day he was up here. He had a short stint earlier in the season. Hit a grand slam off the Cubs, his first career home run. For a while, he was batting 1,000. The average has dipped a little bit playing every day, but you have to get this kid in the lineup, get him major league appearances, get him used to playing first base. Before the season, you said this was a bridge season. Let the kid play, let him make his mistakes now, get him out of his system, and next year when you plan to really run for a division, have him ready to go, and have him get the kinks out of the system. I mentioned Adam Frazier. Also, they have Alan Hansen up. He needs to be playing. He needs to be your first guy off the bench. Put Frazier at second. Mercer, as much as I want to take him out of the lineup, he can't. He plays the game the right way. Scuffling right now at the plate, but he's good defensively. Maybe give him a day off. Or maybe play Hansen at second and play Frazier at third to give David Freese a day off or two. I want to give these young guys some time. The season's over. They're 4.5 back. These pitchers aren't getting the job done. Cole only goes 2 innings in his start against the Cardinals on Labor Day. Then they bring in Jeff Locke, and why he's on this roster, I have no clue. I'm sure you can bring somebody up from one of the minor league teams that have their season end and have them be middle relief or long relief whenever you have a pitcher not go more than 3 innings. This team has lost 7 games. A couple of games they shouldn't have lost. One against the Cubs that they led 6-3, went to extra innings and lost. This team's not scoring, and when they are, they can't keep the other team from scoring. They're in a tailspin. They don't know how to stop it. They don't have enough talent to stop it. And if the Cardinals sweep them, the season is officially over. Because then you're 6.5 games back. With 25 games to go, you're not making that ground up. Even if you get these 2 games with the Cardinals, the Mets are still ahead of the Pirates, and they may jump the Cardinals if the Pirates beat the Cardinals both games. So then you're chasing the Mets still, and you don't gain ground on them. They're in a tough spot. They allowed themselves to flounder while both wild cards were available. The Giants have been in a tailspin. They may not even host the wild card game. But the Pirates, with their rookie pitchers and some of the players that they have on this roster that are ineffective, like Jeff Locke, like Juan Nicasio, like Sean Jaso, Sean Rodriguez has started to slip. Those guys that are Clint Hurdle's favorites, Jaso and Rodriguez, have taken this team from a chance to make a wild card spot as they tout making the playoffs for the 4th year in a row, even though it's a play-in game, to fighting to have a winning season. You go to the other side of the state, and it's the same deal, just a couple more losses in the column for the Philadelphia Phillies. They're 61-76. They just snapped a 6-game losing streak on Monday, beating the Marlins. Before that, they were swept by both the Nationals and Braves. In that stretch, shut out twice. They were outscored 25-11 in those 6 games, averaging roughly 4 runs for their opponents, almost 2 for the Phillies. So not as bad as the Pirates when it comes to the offense in those games, which means shorter games. There's Pirate games, 3.5, 4-hour games. And that's why people don't like baseball. It's too long. You need to speed these games up. And I have plenty of ideas for that, which I will use in later shows. But right now, it's all about venting about the Pirates falling apart. They are who we thought they would be at the start of the year. I didn't expect them to be flirting with 500, but I also didn't expect them to be a playoff team. This was supposed to be a rebuilding year. They didn't want to say it, but when you look at what they had coming up through the system, with Tyon, Cole, Glasnow, Josh Bell, Austin Meadows, who's ready to come up next year, Elias Diaz, who's waiting in the wings, this was a year to get some players up here, get them some experience, and as much as they didn't want to admit that to the fans because they needed them to come out to the games, everyone knew this team was not good enough. While it was a salary dump getting rid of Liriano, he was one of the team's worst pitchers, couldn't find the plate. Yeah, they had to give up a couple prospects to get the job done, but there were guys who were never going to make this team, and while we always talk about not trading prospects for bringing in guys to help the team, getting rid of Liriano was a help. It allowed other guys to come up, made room for Cole, and it gives them spots for next year. They needed to make that move. Yeah, it's a salary dump, but they also used some of that money to keep David Freese here, who needed to stay here, especially with all the things going on with Jung Ho Gung. They still have Freese at third base if something happens to Gung with his legal troubles. A guy who can also play first base. He can spell Bell next season. They did spend money there. They took a lot of the money from Liriano that they saved and used it on Freese, which is an improvement. Yeah, it's moving money, but it's moving money in a positive direction. A guy who can help this team. One of the better finds by Neil Huntington. As much as I hated the move at the time because it was a salary dump, it was a good baseball move because you were getting rid of a pitcher that was done. He has pitched okay for the Blue Jays, but he was never going to find it with the Pirates. All he was going to do was bring this team closer to being below 500, which this 7-game losing streak has allowed them to do. That will do it for this edition of Trips Talking Sports. I opened up with college football, first week of the season. Some ranked teams battling it out. A couple teams in the top 5 upset. Looked at Penn State and Pitt, getting ready for the Keystone Classic, which will take place this weekend. Possible expansion in the Big 12. Went to the NFL, looked at the new starting quarterbacks for this season, and discussed Major League Baseball, both the Pirates and Phillies on lengthy losing streaks. The Phillies snapping theirs on Monday. The Pirates still going through their losing streak. I'm Jerome Chell III, saying thanks for listening to the first episode of the relaunch of Trips Talking Sports.